Welcome to the Do More Good podcast. Now, if you're new here, prepare yourself for a journey filled with heartwarming tales and career wisdom from the movers and shakers of the third sector and beyond. Those of you who've been with us for the previous 100 episodes, rest assured, we've got the same three jokes you've become accustomed to, but more stories from people doing more good. I'm Kenneth, the global head of commercial and fundraising at the amazing organisation that is Partrun, and the kind of person who feels right at home busting a move on the dance floor of an industry conference.
And I'm James, big fan of spreadsheet formula and head of public fundraising at Sue Ryder. This is the Do More Good podcast.
You're listening to the Do More Good podcast.
The Do More Good podcast.
Welcome to Do More Good podcast.
Good, do more.
Do more good podcast. Do more good podcast.
That's what you want me to say.
Yeah. What are you going to say?
You're listening to the Do More Good podcast.
Here we are, James, back again for another podcast episode. It's the Do More Good podcast, episode 115. Sounds quite bizarre to say it. How are you doing?
Kenneth, the man with a face for TV. Good to see you. You well? I hear that actually your face, or rather your name, has been all over TV. You've been on
Mine?
Prime Minister's Question Time.
Not me. Yesterday, I was really surprised because I got a number of messages from like friends. And I think this says something about my friends, that on Prime Minister's Questions yesterday, which was like 1:30 in the afternoon, he got asked a question by an MP about Partrun and basically gave a really good answer. And he said, like, I've been to Partrun and Partrun should be in every community in the UK. And then like my phone started kind of clicking away with a few messages. And I was like, I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but who sits there and listens to Prime Minister's Questions?
Well, clearly your friends, you know. Well, it's quite, I'd imagine, smart people listening to Prime Minister's Questions. Very good. Very good. Have you checked against the database? Has he been, you know, bringing his barcode down to the local? I don't know which one it is, Downing Street, Park Run. Is there one in Whitehall, maybe? I'm not sure.
No, it was good. But yeah, it's been a good start to the year. How's your start been? You've got a new job, haven't you?
Yes, I have. So we had a really busy December, and then I've started a new role, still at Sue Ryder, but a different department in the new year. So that's been quite nice that nobody expects me at the moment to know what I'm, much like this show, really. No one expects me to know what I'm talking about. So I've had a couple of weeks of grace and getting to know the new team. That's been really good. That's been nice. Yeah. Different things to talk about, but that's been good. And we are currently recording halfway between interviews in my eldest daughter's parents' evening. So we just ticked off technology. We have got geography coming up after this. So a full afternoon of chats. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds fun. And is it one of those systems where you get like the strict 5-minute deadline to kind of fully understand how great your child is in that 5 minutes?
Yeah, we get all the complaints out of the way within the first 4 minutes, and then we talk about what they've got coming up. Yeah, there's not too much to say, really. We're one term in, but, you know.
Well, good. Well, look, we don't want you to be late for that, and I know our guest has also got somewhere to be, so we'll crack on. I'm really excited about this one. It's been one that we've been trying to get in for a while and finally kind of managed to get a date in, so it's really good. So I'll crack on with the intro. Our guest this week has over 20 years of CSR and ESG experience working with a range of organisations to build and deliver innovative focused partnerships and programmes. Now, having worked for not-for-profit organisations, travelled the world and led and implemented teams at some of the world's best known companies, our guest now resides as the global head of communities at the global sports betting, gaming and entertainment company Flutter PLC. An active volunteer, board member, trustee with years of experience, they now lead one of the key pillars of their organisation's positive impact plan that has a bold ambition to improve the lives of 10 million people by 2030. Now, in a world where big business has a significant role to play in helping address some of society's challenges, we're hoping through this conversation to share some fascinating insight into this area of the sector that hopefully inspires others to follow a similar path. So we'd like to welcome Kerry McNally to the Do More Good podcast. How are you doing, Kerry?
I'm good, thanks. I was about to say, who are you introducing? That person sounds fabulous.
It's amazing. I mean, it's great. We get to kind of dig around into a little bit. Well, we use LinkedIn. Dig around into some of our guests' background. But it was great reading through yours and obviously traveling the world as well. That sounded really exciting.
I was thinking about this when I was preparing for today. I spent 3 months in South and Central America. Most of it was volunteering at a school in Guatemala. It was just I mean, it was very hard, but it was a fairly life-changing experience. So yeah, I like to travel a bit, like lots of people.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And when you're back home in the UK, are you the kind of person that listens to Prime Minister's questions?
I was thinking that. No, I'm not. I'm not that clever, unfortunately. My husband probably would be listening to it, though.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Kerry, so as we've heard in the intro, you've obviously worked in a selection of kind of high profile, large organisations, but you've always kind of had that vested interest in doing more good in the world. Can you just kind of take us back to the start, to the background? Where did your kind of career journey start? And what led you, do you think, into having these type of roles in your career?
I'll start by saying it was a total accident. And like most early 20 people leaving university, I didn't really have much clue what I was going to do either. I actually started out thinking I'd end up in marketing or communications. That was really where I wanted to go. And then when I left uni, I just needed a job, mostly to get myself out of home, because I, like lots of people, I'd gone back home for a period of time. And I found myself by chance at probably what was a pivotal point for me, working for a charity called Common Purpose. And they're an incredible organization. They essentially believe that if you give people information about society and, you know, the realities of what's happening in society, any decision maker at all sorts of different levels, if they're informed, they'll make better decisions, which will make society better. So that I've condensed that quite a lot. But through that, I spent a lot of time getting to know lots of people at different levels, CEOs at hospitals, prison guards, everything in between, you name it. You know, we really came across everyone, and it was incredibly fascinating time. But during my last year there, I actually ran an award scheme for young people who are trying to change their communities positively. And it was sponsored by Deutsche Bank. And I can remember to this day leaving work one Friday, and my old boss, Kate Cavell, who's now at Allen & Overy, she gave me a call and she said, I've got an opening in my team. I want to know if you're interested. And she, and I was like, well, I'm interested to find out more. And she told me, and I'm thinking, what? You want to pay me what's probably going to be a lot more than I'm on a starting salary in a charity to basically give money to charity? I was like, well, duh, who wouldn't want to do that? I completely transparent with you. I had no idea what CSR was. I had no idea that companies really, I mean, I obviously knew that Deutsche was sponsoring this one thing, but I didn't really have any sense of the scale of what CSR was even then. And so I started at DB, and frankly, it was an amazing experience, because that's really where I grew up on CSR, and I learned a huge amount from my boss Kate and, you know, the rest of the team, and lots of different charities that we worked with over the 10 plus years that I was there. But yeah, so I'm not really a blueprint of how you end up in this kind of world, but yeah, it's definitely been a journey that I'm pleased that I went on.
You know what, I'm not sure. You might be a blueprint for it, because so many people say that they fell into fundraising or doing good in some way societally by accident, because it isn't necessarily that, it's not a role that you consider at school. It's not necessarily something that is taught to kids, whether they're at school or something they do at uni. It tends to be something that they fall into because someone at Deutsche Bank calls them and says, do you fancy this gig? And you have no idea what it is. And then so I think it's lovely that you found it, and then it's quite a nice story for people that you don't necessarily have to have that plan. You haven't got to have that. You can learn on the job and find out, you know, say yes to the gig first, take the big pay, and then work out what the hell you're going to do once you walk in the door. That's great. Good for you.
Yeah. And to be honest with you as well, obviously over the years, I've encountered lots of people who, I speak to lots of people who want to find out more about what this is all about and, you know, how roots into it. And actually, I will say that with the exception of probably the environmental aspect, which requires a lot more qualifications and a better brain than mine, I would say that everybody spends a lot of time and money on getting the qualifications to do this. And actually, don't underestimate the learning on the job, because actually, like, having a master's in community investment does not guarantee you a job in community investment, because the experience of just working in communities, working with nonprofits trying to have an impact, working with companies trying to do the same, all of that, from whichever angle you're coming at, makes a huge difference as well.
Yeah, I was talking to someone recently about recruitment and talking about it, kind of to your point about you working with communities. And actually, this is where attitude goes a long way. when you're recruiting. You know, like someone could come to me with a brilliant degree and brilliant academics, but actually if they don't have the right attitude and they're not open to kind of an empathy for other people and trying to have that level of understanding and able to connect, that kind of far outweighs whatever maybe they've got written on their CV. So yeah, yeah. Certainly connect with that. Just thinking for people listening, and some people may think of CSR as charity of the year, you know, or an organization choosing to do a bake sale for a local charity, but it's much bigger and more important part for any kind of strategy for any business. Just wondered how you define CSR or ESG, whichever, I know they're slightly different, and what it means to you.
It was interesting because it started as CSR, as you mentioned, ESG, sustainability, the terms, they continue to kind of change and move on, but they're all fundamentally the same thing. And it makes me chuckle slightly because today lots of people think CSR is just the charity of the year or the bake sale or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you forget that actually CSR is just the old acronym for ESG, basically, if you go back a few years. But I still think of them sort of all in the same in a way. They're basically how a company chooses to respond responsibly to the society in which it's succeeding. It's recognizing that you don't operate as a company in a bubble. You can't just be about, you know, making a profit and, you know, doing your thing over there separate from the rest of the world. Whether you like it or not, you have an impact on that world. And why not make that a positive impact, whether that be the way you treat your people, making sure that the diversity of your organization is reflective of the communities that you're in, whether it be, you know, giving back to the community and sort of supporting those that need a helping hand, or whether it be your environmental footprint. It's the entire ecosphere of how you are responding in a social and environmental way to the world, because a company, whether they like it or not, they're part of that world, and you can't succeed if it all falls apart, then you're also up the creek, so to speak. So, you know, it's in your interest to make sure that everybody's succeeding, including yourselves.
Nice. And you talked a little bit there about how you started at Deutsche Bank, or as we say, DB. That's how we describe it here. You spent 12 years there responsible for that CSR or ESG function. Looking back on it, what did you learn from that experience, and why does it matter to them?
DB, I also call it DB, but I've learned that lots of people don't know what that means.
No, I love it. DB, we'll call it DB forever.
DB, that works for me. So I think I learned that it was really the power of how working together can have a bigger impact at a bigger scale. That's, I think, where it all came to fruition for me in my head. And by that, I mean everything from, if you've got a charity of the year, mobilizing the entire workforce to raise money for that charity of the year, you have an exponentially bigger impact on that organization and then their beneficiaries together than you do as a single. But also, I've noticed through CSR, particularly with companies, there are so many networks that bring other CSR professionals together. Everybody, regardless of what industry or company you're working for, they all are trying to achieve the same thing, which is help their companies be a positive force in the world in one way or the other. And so I think the time that when I was at DB, because it is a huge company, I mean, at that time in London alone, we had over 10,000 people. Wow. All within the square mile. And today, I mean, I'm not entirely sure how big they are, say, but, you know, you're talking in numbers that large, you just suddenly start to see how big an impact you can have, you know, as a relatively small team, or, you know, in other companies I've been one person, but, you know, you can make a huge difference to the footprint of that company and the difference that it can make by working together and then collectively with other people also striving to do the same thing elsewhere.
I'm just interested, Kerry, in the experience that you've had, and like we spoke a little bit about it, about kind of people thinking of CSR being charity of the year and thinking of bake sales. How have you seen kind of attitudes change towards CSR over your career? I get the feeling that maybe 15, 20 years ago, it was a little bit like, oh, we need to do a bit of something like this and oh, that team. But now it's so much more central to a lot of organization strategies and really pivotal for a lot of organization strategies. How have you experienced that change?
That's a good question. I think probably in the way that they're doing it, the sort of the approach they're taking to CSR or ESG or whatever you want to call it, but also the way companies are talking about it. You know, if I think back to the beginning of my career, although I will say DB was pretty advanced at the time, as quite a lot of financial services firms tended to be at that time anyway. It was very much, you know, there's no gone are the days of writing a check, feeling good about yourself, posting it off, and then like tick, I've done that. I've done CSR and it's all good. The movement that everybody's taken now, it's much more about a partnership with community organisations, charities. You know, it's recognising that you both have something to get out of this relationship to, you know, to improve your community or whatever. And so invest in it in the way that you would any other kind of relationship. Share, you know, discuss and share your objectives, make sure you're agreeing the direction that you're going, have, you know, build the relationship. You know, this is, that approach was not so common, you know, way back when. And today it's much more normalized and there's sort of, everybody has a clear plan. There's usually a strategy in place about where they are, where they want to be. So it's a much more thoughtful and more effective way of doing it. But I'd also say companies as a whole, they're talking loud and proud. Yeah. Anybody that has any form of sustainability plan, I mean, for us, it's the positive impact plan, but it's, you know, one and the same thing. You go to any homepage of any large company, any successful company, it's right there. What are they doing to give back to the community? How are they addressing their environmental impacts, whatever it might be? That it's front and center on websites, on investor reports, on, you know, you name it. So I think it's the seriousness that they're taking what they're doing and how they're talking about it alongside, you know, their profitability. That's what I've seen the biggest change, I'd say.
As we look to the future of the Do More Good podcast, we've launched our very own Patreon page for those who want to support the show and help us keep delivering passion-filled interviews with those from across the social impact space. From just £3 per month, you can join our community with a personal acknowledgement, a chance to feature as a guest, and to become an official friend of the show. Any funds will help with creating the podcast and bringing our long list of ideas for episodes and live events to life. Please go to patreon.com/domoregoodpod. Thank you for listening.
You talked there about the positive impact that it has on communities and beneficiaries of the charities that you're supporting. Presumably, it also has a positive, massive positive impact internally as well, about internal culture and belonging and being part of an organisation and identifying as an organisation that does that as well. So the internal benefits as well for those 10,000 staff in the square mile.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say if I just think about myself, and I do like to think of myself as a young part of the younger generations, probably not true anymore, but particularly younger generations, they don't want a job that pays money and then they go home and forget about it now. That's just, I mean, some people I'm sure still want that, but most people want to go to a workplace where they feel valued and where the company shares their values and, you know, is doing more than just, you know, taking every inch of their life to kind of turn a profit and then doesn't care anything else about it. That's not true anymore. You know, people want to feel like their company cares about them and cares about, you know, other things beyond just making profit. And I think sustainability, CSR, you know, not just the world of community, but the, you know, the broader CSR agenda, it's a huge differentiator between one company and the next. If you've got, you know, you've got two organizations, you think, oh, who am I going to work for? If they're in the same industry, they're probably fairly similar. So you start to look at other things. And I think CSR is a key one of those things that you look at. So actually, they're not just interested in, you know, the dollar signs. They're actually also giving back and they're supportive of, you know, X, Y, and Z. That's probably going to be a better place to work for me and a better fit with my values. And I think that's a growing trend.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And in your current role as head of communities at Flutter, we couldn't help but notice that the naming of your pillar that I think you're responsible for, if that's right, currently aligns pretty well with the name of our podcast. So we just wanted to have a conversation about that. You know, maybe there's a royalty somewhere or something like that. We'll lend you the name. But can you just tell us a bit more about the pillar, the role that you play and the overall direction of the organization's going in?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I can't take credit for the name. It pre-exists my time at Flutter.
Oh, right. Okay.
Sorry. You have to take the royalty chat up with other people at higher pay grade.
He will. He will. Don't worry.
So the Positive Impact Plan was launched, I think it was early in 2022, and it essentially is made up of four pillars. I mean, it's basically just the name for our sustainability plan. And the plan was kind of, the company went through a materiality process, so checking with stakeholders, you know, what are the most material issues that we as Flutter should be looking at? And for reasons I probably don't need to explain. Safer gambling obviously became an incredibly central part of that. So that's obviously one of our pillars. So I should say safer gambling we call Play Well. Work Better is our DEI, you know, people focused pillar. Go Zero is our environmental pillar, and then Do More is the community pillar. I can't give you too much insight into why Do More. I do find myself randomly using it as a pun, you know, to internally trying to get people to volunteer, you know, do more for the community. I cringe a little bit when I do it, but I also secretly quite like the fact that I can do the play on words. But Do More is basically all about how we're responding to our communities, whether that be a charity committee in Malta, you know, organising a refugee festival, or whether that be the Charity of the Year programme in the UK, or whether that be, you know, global partnerships such as the one that we have with Cure Leukemia and supporting the Tour 21. So, you know, the scale of the initiative, the amount that we're giving or the type of support we're giving is irrelevant. The point is that going back to that whole kind of the power of working together to achieve a bigger impact, Do More is really about that. It's about harnessing the power of all of our brands and our divisions and our people and the importance that they put on giving back to the community and how we can collectively kind of talk about that under this kind of title, Do More, and our very ambitious target of 10 million lives by 2030.
Yeah. And we've moved on, for our audience benefit, we've moved on from DB to Flutter. So could you just tell us a little bit about Flutter? And then maybe I found what you were talking about there was really interesting. For you personally, that must be great to work on different projects around the world and that broad range of things and ways that you can improve lives in communities.
Yeah, it's not as glamorous as it sounds. I don't get to travel the world and experience all these different cultures, not yet anyway, maybe a bit more hopefully. So for those that don't know, Flutter Entertainment is the group or the parent company for a large number of gambling and gaming companies. In the UK, most famously known for owning Paddy Power, Sky Betting and Gaming and Betfair, but we also own FanDuel in the US, Sportsbet in Australia, and a number of other brands. MaxBet, I think, is the most recent addition to the family, but we're the largest. So we're pretty big, 23,000 people worldwide and growing. But obviously our roots firmly in Ireland, in Dublin HQ. And obviously we have a big presence here in the UK.
Right. And isn't it great, James, that, you know, an organization the size of Flutter reached the same conclusion when they were trying to talk about, as we did in that pub 6 years ago when we talked about naming this podcast?
Well, I remember the quite extensive work that went into that. There were at least three pints behind that one, weren't there?
Exactly. That's all it takes. Gary, just back to a more serious point. Just interested in around, you know, we talked about CSR. We've talked about all of the exciting things that you can do with it, the impact that it can have on culture. But just wanted to get into that kind of the more business side of it, maybe in terms of measuring the impact of your work. And maybe if you can kind of talk a little bit about kind of frameworks that you use when thinking about what you're going to partner with. How does that come about?
Oh, that's a big question.
If you've got 3 hours. We'd look at,
I'm not even sure 3 hours would cut it. So for us at Flutter, obviously we've elected to aim for this 10 million lives by 2030. Really, if you start drilling into what that means, it can mean any number of different things. So it can be quite challenging to sort of pinpoint and actually pick your corner. You're like, right, this is what we mean by measure, by an improving a life, and this is the direction that we're going in. So we've not really ever done this before. So I think at the moment a lot of what we're doing is trying to put the foundations in to be able to measure. We've chosen to go with B4SI, which is Business for Societal Impact, owned by Corporate Citizenship, which is an organization operating in this space, one I'd recommend anybody interested in CSR to explore. And they have a standardized framework that they recommend companies follow to measure and to track the impact of their community investment activities. They do other things as well, but that's one of the central pieces. And they have member companies all over the world that basically say, yep, we will adopt that. We will use that framework to measure and report on our impact. And then you submit your data to their benchmark, so you can kind of more compare apples for apples, if you like, with other companies in your own sector or in other sectors as well. So that's the one that we follow. With the lives improved, that's obviously the key metric that we're looking to. So when developing a new partnership and stuff, that's one of obviously the forefront of my mind is, you know, how not necessarily is this partnership going to deliver a lot of lives. That feels that's not the right approach, but more, you know, are they able to actually demonstrate that they can measure that impact in a meaningful and real way? So it's more that kind of angle rather than, oh no, you don't support 100,000, that can't be good, because that wouldn't work. But actually what I want to get to is looking way beyond that as well, because there are so many different ways that you can improve a life. You know, having a life-changing impact on somebody who's homeless versus, you know, giving access to a course to somebody that helps make them more employable versus giving somebody access to a football club, go and play a game of footy on a Saturday. They're all different types of impact that are out there. They're all valid. They all have a place in the world. And what I'd like us to get to is be able to go, okay, yes, we've improved this many lives and that's great, but actually this is how we've done it. And these are the different areas that we're focusing on in the different parts of the world, so that it becomes, rather than just kind of a top line impact, it becomes much deeper. But that's the journey we're on at the moment.
Nice. And having that impact on so many lives must be quite nice for you. And looking as we say, you're very young and only at the beginning of this career, but looking back on that experience, and maybe for people, you know, considering a change or thinking about that shift from perhaps like your pure nonprofit into what you do, is there any advice or insights other than take the gig and turn up and work out how to do it that you might share with our audience about making that move or changing roles?
Yeah, I would say probably don't assume it will be a straight line. I think the thing that lots of people, particularly starting out their career, is like, oh, this is what I'm going to be, and I will apply for a job here and that will set me on the path. And the older I've got, the more I realize that is that's the exception rather than the rule. So I think the advice I'd say is it's not going to be a straight line. So you may have to think beyond just your next job. You need to think, if the end goal is really to be sitting where I'm sitting, then consider where you are today, consider the different components that you might want, because you're going to probably want to have some experience of working with a company in one way or another. So you just get a sense of what it is to work in or with a corporate organization, work with or volunteer with charities. So again, you get a sense of what they're trying to do, understand kind of the issues in, I'm not saying being an expert, but kind of plug the holes in your CV, if you like, and take the jobs that might help you there. Or, and I can't stress this enough, volunteer. People don't, they always assume that volunteering means, you know, being a member of your PTA or turning up at parkrun. Both are also brilliant volunteering, but there are lots of ways that you can volunteer that actually add value and skills to your CV that can then help you as you transition into a role like mine. So yeah, don't think it'll be a straight line, because it definitely won't be.
Awesome. Love that. I think your daughter heard Kerry talking, James, because she was worried about her geography teacher's going to say on the next thing. She popped her head in and then popped her head straight out. Look, Kerry, that's amazing. Thank you so much for that insight. I think it's really good. As we said in the kind of when we were talking about it, it's not an area that we've covered. So I think you've managed to consolidate down into kind of half an hour, a good kind of summary of what it might look like. So I hope people will enjoy that. But we're not going to let you go quite yet. We've got a few quickfire questions that we drop in at the end. Now, normally our guests don't see these questions, but of course, Kerry being the prepared person that she is, actually asked us to send the questions in advance. We should have removed these.
I had a panic.
I'll pop first. So if you could transport yourself back in time and meet your 20-year-old self, what piece of advice would you give and why?
Well, I started with don't drink so much, but then I thought that sounds too much like my mum. So, you know, let's be realistic. In all seriousness, I would say, well, there was two, one of which was actually don't worry so much what other people think. But then I was like, that's ridiculous. You can't stop yourself doing that. And I still to this day, I can't stop myself doing that. So I think if I was really pushed, I would say enjoy the here and now. The future will take care of itself. All you can do is what's right for you today. Make the best decision for today, whether it be a fun or a work or whatever, and just enjoy the here and now.
Nice.
And I like this bit of proper consideration of that as well, actually. You have two ideas that you've crossed out and thought, no, this is what I'm going with. And I'm firmly with you on the enjoy here and now. I've been watching a lot of The Bear. So I would love Oh my God, it is the best TV show I have ever seen.
Ooh,
so many lessons about work as well. There's one episode in particular, which is just basically why do we work? And it articulates that in a, I'm not going to, we can do an entire episode on it. So.
I have that challenge every day.
There you go. Watch the show and it might, yeah. And part of it is, you know, enjoy every second and make the most of your moments, but think about the future and how this, yeah. Anyway, we'll do a separate episode on that once you've watched it. Second question for you. Can you tell us about a life hack, a productivity tool, or a skill that you have taught yourself recently you think everybody needs to know about?
I'm a bit worried about revealing this because it gives a little insight into how geeky I am. I was really, at first I was like, I haven't taught myself anything, that's really sad. But then I remembered I have recently been teaching myself how to create dashboards, and I've suddenly been exposed to the delight of a combo board, I should say an Excel. A combo box, I think it's called, a combo box in Excel. And if you've never heard of these things, it game changer. It will revolutionize the way you use Excel.
Wow. That is a bold statement, because James actually dines out on the fact that he is an Excel.
I can no longer claim that because I have no idea what a combo box is.
So. Honestly, when you're trying to like show like a lot of information in a sort of an easy to access way, creating dashboards and using the combo box, honestly. Right.
Well, there you go. That's my evening sorted. Thank you very much. Yeah, wonderful.
And then the last question. So as a podcast that focuses on people doing more good, what's your favorite story or inspiring individual that you've met on your journey? Maybe recently, or the last person that you met who's done something good for others?
You know, there's too many. I can't pick somebody I know because I'll get into trouble with somebody else that I know. But I did think there's one person that I've always thought was underestimated. And this is going to sound a bit random, but it's Eddie Izzard. When he did the Sport Relief fundraiser, he did something 43 marathons in 51 days. And at the time, I can remember it wasn't, I mean, obviously there was a bit of publicity, but it wasn't a huge amount. And I just thought, oh my God, I've done one marathon and I nearly died. The thought of having to do 43 marathons back to back, I was like, yeah. I don't even know how he did it.
Yeah.
And I just think to do something that incredible, specifically to raise money for charity, I think it's just amazing.
Yeah. And I think was he the first one to do the sort of mega challenge, whereas prior to that, people would go and run a marathon and that would be Sport Relief and that would be wonderful. And then he turned up and did the 43 in 51 days. And then Davina McCall was like, you bastard. You've just raised the bar for every... Now they have to do. They have to do that,
yeah.
That crazy level. Greg James
last year. I will say as well, stuff. I need to do a little very small plug. I'm also incredibly inspired by everybody that does the Tour 21, which is... amateur cyclists, like regular people, like maybe not like me because I can't do it, who cycle the full Tour de France, and they raise £1 million for acute leukemia. Like
with Jeff Thomas, is it his one?
It's the one that he did, but they've now moved it on, so it's all just regular people who want to take on a challenge. Just incredible.
Yeah.
Can I tell a quick story? I met someone recently just in the village that I was quite inspired by. There was an old gentleman, we'll call him Ron.
Is that because that's what his name is?
Yeah, I think
is that because you've forgotten his name?
I was like trying to think, where can I find his name? And I was like, let's call him Ron. Ron Fitz. So Ron must be in his late 70s, 80s. And like every month he organises the like local litter picking in the village. And like he's out there every week, like, and he goes out on his walks and he just picks up the litter. Then once a month, and I'm on the email trail now because we joined as a family like a couple of months back. And like every month, he organises his litter picking, and we all go and meet him. And he gives us a thing. He just does it because he just wants the village to be clean. And it's just like, there you go. So Ron, that's the person I've met recently that I was just like, you know, you do that just because you love it and you just want to do it. That's the only reason.
The world needs more Rons in it.
Exactly. You do run, Ron. Kerry, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And yeah, really some really great insight. Look, if there's anything, any final words that you'd like to leave us with?
No, the only thing I'd say is thank you for listening to me ramble on. And for anybody out there who's interested in finding out more about CSR and stuff, don't be afraid to reach out to, not me necessarily, but other people. And they're normally always happy to have a chat and to give their insight. So embrace 2024, reach out to people and, you know, strive to be more like Ron.
Love it. We'll wrap it there. James, any final thoughts?
Well, you mean you took it out of my mouth, really. I was gonna say be more Ron, but I loved that approach to the early start of your career and just go for it and take the role and work it out later. Brilliant. Spot on.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, both. We'll see you soon.
Cheers.
After 5 years of producing the Do More Good podcast, we've decided to give our audience the chance to support the show. With increasing costs of hosting, James's obsession with perfection, an exciting list of ideas and interviews, there is now the opportunity to join our Do More Good podcast community through our very own Patreon page. At www.patreon.com/domoregoodpod, from just £3 per month, you will get a personal thank you from us, access to our growing community, and help us keep doing what we love and sharing the stories of people doing more good. We're immensely grateful for your support. Just head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/domoregoodpod. Thanks for listening.